T-minus 10, 9, 8. We have a go for main engine start. We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, and welcome to episode 50 of Frankly MSP, the podcast where managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. I'm your host, Jennifer Tribe. My guest today is best-selling author and speaker, Mike Michalowicz. But before we get there, we have a lot of 50 things for you. At the top of the podcast, you may have recognized the NASA recording of the Apollo 11 blastoff sequence. 2019 being, of course, the 50th anniversary of the moon landing, we thought it a fitting intro to the Frankly MSP Podcast 50 celebrations. This is episode 50, of course, and as I mentioned in the last episode, Frankly MSP crossed 50,000 downloads in mid-July, thanks to you, our listeners. No Podcast 50 celebration would be complete without the man himself, the number, the legend, Mr. 50 Cent Piece with his friend Snoop Dogg, fresh off his appearance at DattoCon.
Wow, y'all. Happy to be here. And welcome to DattoCon.
Yo, dog, wrong show, man. Give me that mic.
Hey, homie, you got Snoop and 50 here. Raining his very special 50th episode of Frankly MSP. My bad. You know the Arvish crew for real. They some real cool dudes. And they audience has it going on.
Bruh, MSPs are hella dope. Fixing computers and all that. That's tight.
For real, they the shiz.
And you know my boy Gary? Gary Pika? He even have a snitch fest. Plus that Nanook man, he got a real badass roar. I can draw some real crazy tracks with that for sure. This is how we do.
Y'all just gotta turn it up a dizzle.
For sure, for sure. Keep doing what you're doing, guys, and have a great show. We out.
What? I didn't know 50 Cent and Snoop Dogg listen to Frankly MSP. Paid actors, not the real dudes. Legal disclaimer, don't sue us. Although, let's be fair, managed services are pretty cool. I mean, who wouldn't want to learn how to be a better MSP with more productivity?
Figure out all. Frankly MSP. Didn't see you standing there. Congratulations on your success. You smell terrific. It doesn't take a detective to see your podcast is majestic. Just like that bear of yours. Now, if you'll excuse me, nature calls. Alrighty then.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Got you on the bear. While we're here, I guess I'll just ask if any other random celebrities want to chime in for Podcast 50. Neo?
Congratulations on your 50th episode and 50,000 downloads, guys. I love what you're doing with the show. Bringing some truly amazing minds together to inspire and dare MSPs around the world to think differently about their business. It's like being asked to choose between the red pill and the blue pill, and then suddenly realizing that together, they make a purple pill. Like the exact purple you use to brand the show. Whoa,
indeed. Thanks, man. Also a paid actor, not the real dude. Seriously, don't sue us. All right, if we can get serious for a minute, let's focus on the true man of the hour, my guest for today, Mike Michalowicz. Mike is the author of multiple best-selling books, including Profit First, which he'll be keynoting on at Frankly MSP Live in January, and his latest book called Clockwork. We dig into big promises, QBRs, which aren't what you think they are, the 4 Ds of business, and a simple but extremely powerful shift in perspective that can change everything for you. Let's go.
You're listening to Frankly MSP. Brought to you by Avic Networks.
Hey, Mike, welcome to the Frankly MSP podcast.
Jennifer, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so excited to have you here because, of course, you're going to be a speaker at Frankly MSP Live in January 2020. Yep. And also your backstory. You used to be an MSP, or as they were called in the day, systems integrator. So tell us about that business and how you exited.
Yeah, systems integrator and VAR, value-added reseller. It's strange how the terms, it's so much more appropriate with what they use now. But back then, we were a break-fix model. You know, computer systems would break, we go out and fix them, we'd install networks. This is when NetWare 2.2 was out, VAPS, and we used token ring over coax, which if you even kicked the cable by accident, the entire network would crash. I was in that business for 8 years, and the technology was advancing. That's when we moved to Ethernet, Cat 3, Cat 5, ultimately, while I was still in business. You know, Microsoft took over in the server environment. And the opportunity came up from private equity. A group of successful guys wanted to grow the business in a different way than I wanted to, and offered money for it. So that was my exit. I'll share at the event too. It's, you know, sometimes you hear like, oh, someone built and sold a company. I've had the blessing to do it a few times. There's usually a backstory behind it with, you know, struggles and challenges. And that's where the real learning was. So I felt very lucky to sell the business, though running the business, there was some kind of bumpy moments, seriously bumpy moments that I went through.
So what would you say are some of the biggest things you learned in running that business that you still use today?
Well, you know, I carry the business on my back, and that's the grave mistake that so many entrepreneurs make. That's what I did. I was into the hustle and grind mentality, something that's, you know, perpetuated nowadays. People brag about it and suggest it. And I think it's the biggest fallacy. If we're grinding out our business, if we think grinding is the way to scale a business, we're grossly wrong. I mean, if you've been grinding out your business for years and it's and you're still doing it, you've proven it doesn't work. The big lesson was I had to organize the resources around me, my employees, the technology we used, but even like our vendors, organize them and our clients themselves, organize them to work in this kind of choreographed dance to achieve the vision I wanted. Once I started making that transition from trying to be the guy who led by, you know, quote unquote example, and working like an animal and carrying the business on my back and being the first to show and the last to leave, when I converted over to my job is to organize and choreograph what we have to be an owner, not a doer, that's when things transitioned for me. And that was probably the greatest lesson. I had to go through the pain of doing for way too long to finally realize that's not the approach.
So your first book, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, came out in 2008. So how does that timing line up with when you exited the systems integrator business?
So I exited, I think, in 2003 from the you know, now MSP business. It still runs today. It's called Olmec. So OLMEC.com. You can check it out. And it's grown very successfully. The owner and I are extraordinarily good friends. And I then went into computer forensics. So I was always in the tech space. Started a business, I think it was about 2003, and it was just a stratospheric growth. I think it was in 2.5 years, we were on a run for $7 million of revenue, bootstrapped the whole way, no outside equity or investments. And then a Fortune 500 came in called Robert Half International and acquired us. And I thought I was like a genius. I'm like, oh, I've got this all figured out, Jennifer. Like, I am so good at building and selling businesses. But that too, that business was infrastructurally weak and there was problems. I really only made money selling the business. And then had the greatest lesson of my life. I became an angel investor, spent 2 years doing that. And I was horrible at it. I had no right to be in that space, no experience. And the 10 businesses I started all collapsed. I actually now call myself lovingly the angel of death. I was so bad at it. And that inspired me to reinvestigate my understanding of entrepreneurship. And to look at it from a new perspective, and that triggered Toilet Paper Entrepreneur in 2008, and subsequently, you know, 5 books since then, and I have another one coming out in 2020.
Oh, cool! So we'll talk about that. So yeah, so you've written The Pumpkin Plan, that was 2012, yep. Surge in 2016, Profit First in 2017. That's the one we'll be talking about at Frankly MSP Live. Yep. Your one that's out right now, the newest one, Clockwork, which came out last year. Did you know when you wrote that first book in 2008 that you had all these other ones inside you waiting to come out?
I kind of did, yeah. So there's an interesting realization I've had, and maybe your listeners can grab onto this. There's a saying that says, if you had all the money in the world, what would you do? And it's a great saying or question because it allows you to fantasize about your dream career, whatever. And, you know, some of us may say, oh, I'd sit on the beach drinking Mai Tais, but that would get kind of boring after a while. So for me, it's like, you know, well, one day, if I had all the money in the world, I would just be an author. Well, I found there's another question, a complimentary question that when answered in tandem with the first question becomes now a calling. And for me, it's when I lost all my money. So after I became an angel investor, I trashed myself financially. I lost all my wealth. I did the dumbest of dumbest things financially and in business and had to restart. And there I sat 2008 with, or right around then, with no money, no prospective business ideas or opportunities, no way of getting one started, honestly. And I said, well, what do I want to do? What do I want my vocation to be? And I sat there and said, I want to be an author and I want to make money and earning a lifestyle out of this. And when the answer is your vocation is going to be something and your dream, if you had all the money in the world, is the same thing, to me, that's a calling. And I said, oh my gosh, I have to be an author. I have to correct all my wrongs and my misunderstandings about business and help other people who may fall into similar traps. And that's when I wrote Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. And that's when I knew, like, I'm never going to stop writing books until there's everything I can address has been addressed. And I have already outlined 26 more books.
Wow.
I don't know if I'm going to write them all in my lifetime, but they're outlined and I keep on revisiting them constantly and improving. The one I have coming out in 2020, I've been studying what the biggest challenge is facing entrepreneurs. Now I'm pretty convinced I've figured out the biggest challenge facing entrepreneurs is we don't know what our biggest challenge is. That's the struggle we have, is pinpointing what to work on next. So we typically work on everything. We go for the apparent issues and the urgent issues. And I believe there is the impactful item we need to identify. And so I developed a compass, basically a strategy to help businesses discover this. And now I need to write a book on hiring and a different approach to marketing. I think the way businesses are marketing today is becoming less and less effective. So all these books are at least outlined and queued up, and I'm working diligently to get them out.
That's amazing. Does your publisher come to you and say, let's have a look at your list? And do they pick the next one off the list, or do you?
Oh, good question. You know, very few people ask that. Kinda. It's funny. I went to them. So my publisher, when they published The Pumpkin Plan, it was a pretty successful book. Actually, for them, it's really successful. It's called Penguin Books is the publisher. It's become what's called a strong backlist book. That means a book that perpetually sells and actually increases in volume over time. It doesn't happen too often in the business space. Well, I came to him and I said, you know, the next book has to be this thing called Profit First. I got to write this book. And they looked at me and said, I hate to say this, Mike, but it's a dumb idea. Every accounting book has been written. I'm like, this is not an accounting book. It actually spits in the face of traditional accounting and it's a different cash management system. I'm like, no one needs it. So I actually went back to self-publishing. I originally self-published Profit First. I'm so blessed and humbled. It really caught on. The popularity was big. And then really blessed and humbled that Penguin the team there was able to put their ego aside and came back to me about a year later and said, listen, we made a mistake. We didn't understand what Profit First was. We want to crack at this. Let's do a revised and expanded edition together. And we did. And now Profit First has just exploded. Knock on wood, it continues to do that. But it's just been such a blessing on and how many hands it's gotten into.
That's such an interesting story. And I'm very excited for the people at Frankly MSP Live to get a deep dive into that.
January. Oh, so much fun. Oh, we're going to bring it.
Yeah, awesome. But let's talk a little bit about your current book right now, which is Clockwork, Design Your Business to Run Itself. So this is, you know, going back to what you said at the top of the podcast, where the business owner, you know, everything depends on the business owner and they're sacrificing everything to keep the business alive. In the book, you talk a lot about the QBR, declare the QBR, protect and serve the QBR. Tell us more about this concept and how you recommend people use it.
Yeah, I found that every business has an essential function that's happening that is really what differentiates the business. And since I've written Clockwork, I've done more research around it. I may do a expanded and revised version of Clockwork ultimately, because here's what I discovered. This element is not recognized or known by many small businesses. We just say, well, you know, everything's important. We have to do everything. And we don't do the thing that makes us stand out. As an example, I'm going to use FedEx because everyone recognizes that brand. FedEx makes a promise to all its customers, and we all make a promise to our customers. It's called the Big Promise. And the Big Promise that FedEx makes is we're going to deliver your packages on time. Now, they have print services and, you know, they have packaging services. They do that stuff too. But the biggest promise when you think of FedEx is if I'm going to ship it today, it will get to the place I want to go tomorrow. Well, when we figure out what our biggest promises, and it's always a singular promise. You know, maybe you are the most technically sophisticated and you ensure that, you know, your clients have the most advanced technology. Or maybe you deliver the most reliable systems. Or maybe you're just, you know, a company that really empathizes, understands the client's challenges, that you dig into it so deeply that you find this masterful, perfect solution. Now, I realize we do all of those elements, but we can only pick one that we are world famous for, the big promise. So once you identify that, then we peel back the onion one layer and say, what's the singular activity that most makes that promise reality? So for FedEx, FedEx promises to deliver packages on time. The biggest activity that makes that promise a reality is logistics. And my argument is this, like FedEx tomorrow could come out and say, well, you know what? We're going to stop doing logistics. We want to concentrate our efforts more on customer service. We want to have the most friendly customer service department, and screw logistics. You know, the packages can find their own way. If FedEx did that, fast forward 1 week from today, I would argue FedEx would be on the verge of going out of business. Like the news, the article hits, you know, like FedEx, super friendly, but they don't know where the F the packages are, right? I would never do business with FedEx again. That's why I'm using them. That's their commitment and big promise to me. Now, the interesting thing is I would argue FedEx could do the reverse. FedEx could say, starting today, we're going to dump customer service. We really stink at it anyway. Let's just stop answering the phones altogether. And let's just concentrate on making sure every single package gets delivered on time. No package ever gets lost. Fast forward 1 week from that commitment. And I think what the news article will say is, you know, FedEx, customer service slacking, but packages getting delivered, you know, nailing it on package delivery. And I would argue FedEx would stay in business. Some people may get grumpy about the poor customer service, but the core competency is being delivered on. So FedEx may kind of waffle a little bit, but they'll definitely stay in business. Well, for small business, we have to identify what is that promise we make, the core number one singular big promise to our customers, then identify the singular activity that supports it. That is the QBR. It stands for Queen Bee Role. I derived it from studying beehives and noticed that the most important role in beehives is the production of eggs. It happens that the queen bee lays eggs, but I'm not saying she's the most important bee. It's the function of laying eggs that's most important. And if the queen bee fails to deliver on that, they'll spawn a new queen bee. We have to identify in our business the number one promise, then look back and say, what is the activity that's making that promise a reality? There may be multiple, but what's the number one activity? And make sure that never gets compromised. Just to wrap up the FedEx story, every winter season, FedEx's logistics is put at risk. Every winter season, there's a surge of package demand. I think package shipping goes up over 100%. Maybe it's like 200 or 300% more packages ship between November, December, and January than any other time of the year. And FedEx doesn't say, we can't handle it, or let's just deliver packages later. What FedEx does is they redirect their team. So the managers that are sitting behind desks in the other time of the year, they get out and they start driving trucks. They hire more part-time staff to work at the distribution centers. They focus on making sure that one core competency, the QBR of logistics, never goes impeded. We need to do the same thing. Once you identify the QBR, never let it go impeded, never let there be a problem, and let your entire team know if we're not delivering on this one component, nothing else matters as much as that we have to deliver on it.
So the queen bee role is not a person or a function like network administrator, but it's a tactic.
That's exactly right. And it gets a little confusing because I called it the queen bee role. I can't tell you, I just returned from a keynote for dance studios and a lot of these entrepreneurs came up to me and said, I'm the queen bee. I'm like, you may be calling yourself the queen bee, but that's a fatal flaw. It's not about a person or persons. It's about a function. The people serve that function.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avic Networks.
You also talk in the book about the four Ds. What are the four Ds?
Yeah, so what I found is there is four levels of activity that is necessary for a business to thrive. And there's a foundational level. The first D stands for doing. Up to the highest level is called designing. And while a business must be doing a mix of all these elements, an entrepreneur must elevate themselves if they want their business to scale and grow to higher and higher levels. So the base level D stands for doing. This is an activity that derives benefit to your customers or is an activity that supports the deliverables to your customers. So billing and invoicing and marketing are all doing activities. I would say if you follow the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, 80% of a business's time needs to be doing. Like this is our core thing. The next level up is called deciding. Deciding is where you are assigning tasks to employees, but they come back and you are answering their questions. So you are the singular kind of mind for the operation. This is an important phase, but we need to navigate through it quickly. If an employee keeps on being told, you know, come back with your questions, I'll answer them, we're actually disempowering them. And there's a Hindu goddess called Kali that I wrote about in the book, who is a single female head with eight arms. And that's what we become. And businesses get trapped here. Actually, I think it's 97% of small businesses in the world have three employees or less. And the reason behind this is because the owner's making all the decisions. One head, multiple arms. You know you're in this trap when you're hoping the day will end soon because the entire day you've been answering questions so you can finally get to work. And so these entrepreneurs are answering questions and putting out fires throughout the entire day. And then at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, that's when they actually start working. If you're doing that, you are absolutely in the deciding trap, and it's a dangerous trap. It will restrict your growth. It'll drive you nutty. So you need to move to the next level, which is delegation. Most entrepreneurs sadly think they're delegating when they're not. They're actually task rabbiting, they're assigning and deciding. Delegation is not the assignment of tasks. That's the important nuance here. Delegation is the assignment of outcomes. And what I mean by this is that we tell our employee what is expected, what the result is that we expect, and we agree upon the result. And it's their job to make all the decisions to make that outcome happen. Quick example, I could have signed invoicing to one of my team members here. Her name is Jackie. But what we did instead, I said, it's important that we bill our clients timely and accurately. I said, we have a best practice. We have an invoicing process. But as you go through this, anytime you have a question, anytime you have a concern, you hit a decision point or anything, your job is to figure it out. I've hired you for what's on your shoulders, that brain of yours, you figure it out. And I need to keep pushing the decisions back to our employees. That's what you do with the delegation phase. And then the highest level where the entrepreneur wants to move more and more of their time toward is called the design phase. And the design phase is where we have a clear vision of the outcome we want for our business. So it could be revenue, it could be size of the business, it could be experiential, it could be the impact we're having on the world around us. And once you have that clarity, it's then choreographing our resources to achieve that outcome. So we become the organizer. We have the vision and we start shifting our team, developing technology or whatever to move faster and faster close to that vision. We are a true designer. This is a lot of thinking time. In fact, I'd argue there's a statue by Michelangelo dedicated to the most important task we can do. It's the thinker. There's that naked guy with his chin on his fist. I've never seen Michelangelo, by the way, do a statue called the doer, like someone pulling their hair out answering phone calls. We need to scale to this thinking mode, this designing mode, and remove ourselves from doing any activity in the business. Because when the business can run independently of us, now we have a business that can run into perpetuity. It has tremendous valuations, too, for external companies that want to buy us.
You said that productivity is ineffective. And this is a really interesting statement to me because, of course, the Frankly MSP podcast is focused on helping people with productivity and efficiency. So why is it ineffective and what's the alternative?
Yeah, so because we become so dependent upon it. Productivity is necessary, but it's not effective in a business that runs on automatic. Here's what happens. So when I wrote this book, I come up with a hypothesis. And the first hypothesis for this book was how to make your business more productive, because productivity I thought was a solution. So I started meeting with productivity experts. This one guy, his name is Chris Winfield. He's based in New York. At the time, he was the productivity expert for this region. I get a meeting with him. We sit down for a cup of coffee and I said, Chris, I just got to tell you how important is productivity. And he looks me square in the eyes and says, productivity is crap. And I was like, what? I spit coffee out. I was like, what? And he goes, listen, Mike, I've been in this business so long and I'm leaving it now because productivity is a trap. It's necessary, but it's a trap and it does not support scaling business. And I said, why? Well, he started explaining what's called impaction. And here's what it is. If I have a, say, 8-hour day, which is kind of a joke because entrepreneurs usually have 15-hour days, but let's just say I have an 8-hour work day. The only way to get more work done is for me to take my existing work set, crunch it down through productivity tools, shortcuts, so forth, and free up some time. So maybe I free up 2 hours. Now, with those 2 additional hours, I can add and will add more work. Well, now I have 8 hours of work again, but much of it's packed it in. So the only way to get more work done is to pack it in more through more productivity. So productivity requires us to pack in more and more work in a compressed time frame. And the problem is if we have a problem in any one element, any one thread of the work we're doing comes undone, the entire day or week or sometimes month or year can get messed up or destroyed. So productivity is necessary. Like, you know, one great productivity advancement was the invention of the wheel. Like, if we said, you know what, let's ditch the wheels. We don't need that productivity tool. Cars can just, you know, roll around on their square bottoms. You know, we wouldn't move around. Everyone needs to be productive. That's not the question. The question is, the differentiator is in the organizational efficiency. And this is where a business can run like clockwork. It's where you take the multiple elements of your business and you choreograph them to work in concert to achieve outcomes. So it's the shifting of people and resources to be highly complementary. Instead of trying to squeeze more out of ourselves and our colleagues, we look at how do they complement each other in the most efficient way to achieve the outcome we want. And that's where the big gains actually happen.
So let's say you've got an MSP standing in front of you and they say, Mike, I have a pretty good business here. I'm doing all right. It's not great and I want it to be great, but it's pretty good. Where should they start? Where do you think they're going to see the biggest wins from the quickest changes?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll give you the simplest, I think most impactful thing we can do. And it's so easy. You can do this today. And if you own this, this will be a shift for your business. I think the first thing we can do is stop calling ourselves a business owner or an entrepreneur. And as I say that, I actually kind of dry heave it a little bit because I love business owners and entrepreneurs. I love that term. I just think it's become bastardized. And I think the expectation is wrong. Entrepreneur and business owner translates to hustle and grind, which means carry the business on your back. Here's the shift. I challenge everyone listening in now to no longer call themselves a business owner or entrepreneur, but to call themselves a shareholder. So the next time, you know, someone says, what do you do for a business? Instead of saying, oh, I'm an entrepreneur with an MSP, say I'm a shareholder in an MSP. And people will look at you, you know, like a deer in headlights and go, what? But here's what we're doing. You know, a shareholder of a business does not work in the business. If you own shares in some public company, I own some Ford shares. Like I don't drive over to Ford's factory every day and say, hey, I'm a shareholder. I'm here to work. And, you know, I'm not sending money to Ford saying, go Ford, go. I'm a shareholder. I'm expecting a return from me. And that's all I expect. A shareholder is someone that took extraordinary risk and made an investment. Now, in a public stock, you know, I own 0.00000001% of the company. In our small businesses, you know, we own 10%, 50%, 100% in many cases. That's a massive investment in the business. And when you start realizing you're a shareholder risk taker, you realize your job is simply completed. You've started the business and now it's to oversee the vision and vote on its direction or give it direction, but it's never to insert yourself in the business. And if you own that new term and really start believing you're a shareholder, that mind shift will cause a shift in your business. The business will start to run on automatic. It just has to because you've declared a new label for yourself.
That's fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mike.
Oh, Jennifer, it's been a joy. Thanks for having me. I cannot wait for the event. Everyone that's listening in, you better be there. We're going to have an amazing time and you're going to learn a lot. That's my promise.
Yeah, you heard it here. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Mike Michalowicz, author of Profit First and Clockwork, among other best-selling books. Mike, of course, is our opening keynote speaker for Frankly MSP Live in January. So if you liked this interview and you don't have your tickets yet, what are you waiting for? Go, go, go before they sell out. Mike's going to be doing a book signing at the show as well, so it's a great chance to meet him. You can grab your tickets at franklymsplive.com. As always, I'll put that link and links to all the things you need from this episode in the show notes at avik.com/franklymsp/050. Plus, in honor of Podcast 50, there's a bonus rap puppet video with an original rhyme just for you, MSPs. Because who doesn't love rap puppets? Am I right?
You know we down for the shizzle, yeah, you don't go. Guess you didn't know, catch us on the ropes. Yeah, on top, cause that's the rope dope. And we never gon' stop, this that podcast for show. All the bad, you know that the bell roll. All the time, yeah, that's all for show. MSPs, yeah, we keep a G. Several go, yeah, with the IT, yeah, yeah. Ooh, this the network that make the network groovy. This the podcast 50, yeah, then you know we repping it with 50. And we never gon' stop, cause we down to the nitty gritty, yeah. Hitting the 50th episode, 50,000 downloads, yeah. We give you more cybersecurity, the business, this how we do it when you chilling with the crew.
Well, we tried to have some fun with this special 50th episode. I hope you enjoyed all our unreal celebrity endorsements and the very real interview with Mike Michalowicz. A couple of other important bits of news, these are all true. Frankly, MSP will be taking a short break in September. We won't be publishing any new episodes in September, but don't worry, we'll be back in October 2019. Part of what we'll be doing in September is taking a look at your listener feedback and working on shaping the show for another 50 episodes. If you haven't completed the survey yet, there's still time. And as thanks, you'll be entered into a draw for one of three Amazon gift cards for how much? $50, of course, for Podcast 50. I'll put a link to the survey in the show notes at ovik.com/franklymsp/050. That's a wrap. And a wrap. Get it? A wrap. And yeah. Anyway, till next time, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Ovik Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks.